Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Super Wild Card Weekend was super duper duper.
From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL flagship show. Yes, Jason Zumwalt said it. It is Super Wild Card Weekend. It's almost through, boys. We got one more game, but tonight's show is recapping all the crazy action of Saturday and Sunday. Dan Hans is here. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. Hey, boys.
It's a little wild. Always feels a little different when we're taping the whole show after what was Sunday Night Football. Bengals, Ravens, that ball just slipping right so outside close of James Proche's hands. But so I guess it's fitting. Crazy weekend.
Yes. Mark, it was crazy, wasn't it?
I mean, so after the Seattle-San Francisco game, I thought,
yes,
maybe the league, to some degree, now that it's playoff time, has returned to the form that I recall from when we started this show, where you get a dotting of playoff games that are close, but a couple blowouts in there. We've gone totally acid trip with the league. Like, everyone outside of that contest, which even was close at halftime, every game seems to veer into the totally absurd and bizarre and wild and wonderful.
Plays in perfectly to, and listeners of the show, longtime listeners know I've done this before, pro bono, by the way. I offer up league slogans.
Sure.
I have one, just one to share.
Okay.
The NFL, we're not perfect, and by the way, neither are you, but our product, it's good.
It works.
How about just take out the whole first sentence and go right to the product is good?
Sometimes I don't like, you know, of course, NFL, our league, it's a big target. But how about we look in the mirror before we start throwing stones? That's a part of a broader message I wanted to get out there to the people as well.
Yeah, they're protecting themselves in a way that no one can critique. Yeah.
Shooting from behind bulletproof glass. Why don't you step aside so we could actually converse like
humans?
What's
your critique of our sport?
Oh, yeah. I think the through line here is like, you don't like some of our calls or something like that. Were you not entertained?
Yeah. Have you seen our ratings?
What if we just pivot to being like a totally carrying the water podcast for the next 20 years?
I think it would be lucrative.
Yeah,
certainly. So anyway, we're going to get into all the games. Let's roll through it Saturday through Sunday. And there was, and here's the thing, to Mark's point, there was only one blowout this weekend. But even that game, the team that eventually got blown out was freaking winning at halftime. That's how wild Super Wild Card Weekend was. So let's head to the big bell bottom where the San Francisco 49ers look to make their Lombardi Trophy march. Well, get it going. Let's just play it.
Fake the toss. They roll Purdy to the left. Purdy going to throw back middle. Wide open. Deebo Samuel down the sideline.
All
50.
Right.
40. Deebo 30. Deebo
he
20.
Gone.
Deebo 10. Deebo touchdown! San Francisco!
Where the 49ers wanted to start their march to the Lombardi Trophy in style. That would have been a better way to get into that highlight.
Well, you did it. You did a great job.
There's no do-overs in Anyway, Greg Papa, KNBR with the call. Depot, man. It's good that he's back. All this, like, excitement about Brock Purdy happened with Debo Samuel resting up, getting ready after he was injured, and now he's back, and he's just another weapon for this incredible Niners attack and a great defense to boot, and you saw both sides of that in a 41-23 win over the Seahawks. And, Greg, I got to start with Purdy here because I know he wasn't perfect, especially in the first half. But as he heated up with the rest of the Niners and they went on a 25-point run and took control of this game, it just showed once again that this team at its top gear looks like they can beat anybody, even with a seventh-round pick start making a sixth start.
Yeah, you just start wondering who can stop this offense, especially in the NFC. Although I look around the league and I don't know, because I think Purdy's struggles pointed out how incredible this offense is.
I agree with that.
He was cheeks in the first half.
Cheeks.
As the kids would say. Like, he played poorly.
Cheeks.
And at halftime, I kept seeing this, like, analysis. Like, well, the Seahawks played a perfect half. Can they, like, back it up? And I'm thinking, like, yeah, they had the lead. Offensively, they were doing great. They gave up 250 yards in the first half and only stopped the 49ers one time. And it felt like they were just, like, trying to hold the damn water back. And they're giving up explosive plays. And, again, that's with Purdy being erratic, trying to throw interceptions, like being late in terms of his timings.
But
just like the first few drives,
yes,
like throwing towards Seattle.
A little nervous. He seemed to have some nerves. He is a rookie,
but it didn't matter. Like, they got the open receivers. They moved forward, and then he started doing his Purdy thing, and it was just a nightcap. It was over.
I mean, we constantly credit other young quarterbacks for working themselves out of corners and, you know, not
P word,
not losing their
showing
head.
Poise.
Sure. I mean, but he's had a couple games here where, like, he was perfect early on. This obviously was a different case, and it just doesn't seem to really matter with the Niners, because over the course of 60 minutes, they just simply overpower you. I think it's a scheme thing too, to some degree, because all three of his touchdown throws were to wide open receivers who had 5+ yards of separation. He had 179 yards of wide open receiver yards after the catch. I mean, it's like, this offense is set up to fly if you can play competently at quarterback, but he's more than that.
Right. And
he's much more than that.
I think what's really interesting when you hear from whether it's Kyle Shanahan or his teammates, everyone is complimentary of him, but also you don't hear them saying things like the way you hear certain guys talk about, you know, the top level quarterbacks in the league. Like, I can't believe what this guy does, because this offense is so beautifully schemed up and so loaded with talent that you're right. Even with all the throws he missed early on in this game, they still piled up. They were on pace for 500 yards at the halfway point. And then when Purdy settled in, it was like shooting fish in a barrel, really. It was complete. It was so easy. And it makes me just appreciate, Greg, Kyle Shanahan and what he's been able to build here even more. Mm-hmm. And John Lynch, of course, working in tandem to build this roster. It's a fully functional death machine right now.
Totally agree. And the way that they've put these pieces together, where a little bit like that 2016 Falcons team, but better, where it's like a basketball team where every
and that was a great
different
offense.
Yeah. I know, but like at least in terms of the skill position, but
right,
talent, where every player, including Elijah Mitchell, who is a factor in this game, of course, including Kittle, has a different skill set. They all do different things. And at the end of the game, Purdy's completion percentage over expected was basically even. It was like 0.3, because you would be expected to make those throws. You'd be expected to make a 5-yard throw to Debo Samuel. You don't expect Debo Samuel to take it 74 yards. Those crossing routes were just wide open all day, and this was a great matchup for them. They had dominated the Seahawks on both sides of the ball physically in two regular season meetings. They did it again. Seattle had no answer. Tariq Woolen kind of got exposed a little bit on those in-breaking routes, but you started with Debo. I thought that was a great place to, because, man, that was the most Debo's looked all season, and I think that puts them at another level.
Yeah, and I mean, with the Seahawks, because they did hang around, and it's credit to them, and overall, you can look at Seattle and say, I'm glad they didn't pull an upset there, because the Niners, to me, are the team that, you know, mentioned it. I can think they can challenge Philadelphia, they can challenge Kansas City, they can challenge anyone. The addition of Christian McCaffrey is like Debo times two, because he gets it from any point in the field, and he's explosive, and suddenly he's 35 yards downfield or running for a touchdown. But with Geno, I thought they had, you know, the Niners had the back-to-back back-to-back touchdowns and then coaxed Geno into that interception. They had the Charles Menehue like fumble recovery.
The fumble was it.
That was
the interception.
That was
by then it was over.
But that fumble was the like everything pivoted right there. And it's like there seems to be, if you go back and look, they've scored under 33 points once, the Niners, since week 12. And it's like they're just so explosive. But it's like you almost forget that their defense creates those plays too. And like Geno Smith, it was better than that Thursday night game, but it got ugly for them. And you just got hit to a point where it's like Seattle's not getting their way out of this.
He played well, I thought, Geno, in this game. And at that point where he fumbled it, you're right, they were just trying to keep up. The 49ers had scored to start the second half to take the lead back. At that point, it's 23-17. At that point, the 49ers had scored 5 times in 6 drives. They would go on to score 9 times in 10 drives. Like, they scored every drive except for that one punt. And that sequence, I thought, was very telling. They had a short yardage situation. There's an offensive line penalty. They had a ton of offensive line penalties. It backed them up to 2nd and 14. Then it was 3rd and 14, and they got quick pressure, got the fumble on Geno, and it felt like the game's over because there's no margin for error against the 49ers. And I think if you replayed this game 10 times, I'm not sure if the Seahawks win any of them. And I don't say that in the NFL too often, but I just don't think it would happen
too often. We had a very good 2-7 game on the other side in the other conference, which we'll get to later. But this was more in line with what we've seen so far since they have added these playoff teams. You get a team that's, in the old days, had a bye. They were so good they had a bye. They were the second seed in the league. They had 13 or 14 wins. Now they're playing in the wild card weekend, one of the great titans of the league, and you get this team that's very marginal in terms of making the playoffs. And this is the type of games we're going to continue to see, I think, more often than not, even though the NFL, even in its new slogan, the product, it's good. And it has been. It wasn't so good in the second half of this game. I want to hear from Pete Carroll. I was talking about how it's kind of interesting hearing the way Brock Purdy's teammates and his coaches talk about him. Here's what Carroll had to say about Purdy.
Brock Purdy did a really good job staying alive. I don't know why we couldn't sack him. We chased him all over the place. And he's not known for being the greatest scrambler, but he looked like Fran Tarkenton out there today.
I want to point that out. I wanted to play that because his best play of the game, ironically, was an incomplete pass. It was after the game was kind of decided. They were in the red zone. He did this really like savvy, athletic scramble, moving across the field, keeping his eyes upfield, spotting Brandon Ayuk in the back corner of the end zone, and then throwing an absolute dart right in his hands. And Ayuk couldn't handle the ball. But it just shows how much confidence Purdy's playing with. And you put it all together, even on a not a truly dominant day by the San Francisco defense, you know that's in them as well. It's all there for them to go all the way. I think they have that potential. Absolutely.
It absolutely is. And I like ice called Purdy like a superhuman being, like a superhuman, like on the Thursday show, which is an overstatement, obviously. But I just think it's hilarious that how many quarterbacks around the league that like we're in year two of these people, year two and a half, and it's like we've got to have patience with these young quarterbacks. Like what Brock Purdy is doing right now, and I don't need him to be perfect. It's just like the fact, like from the neck up, everything, like he's just fits right in. And like the idea that with this offense, Debo hadn't really done much with Brock Purdy, he fits right in. Like the way that they're operating right now, they seem totally unstoppable. Because the Seahawks in the first half of this game did what you asked. They were mistake-free. Geno played well. They did all they could do, but it's like they can't, you cannot, you have to play more than a complete game. You have to coax the Niners into like a disaster zone, and you can't do it.
I mean, they played fantastic. Back-to-back long touchdown drives, and then got the sneaky field goal right before the half when the 49ers left them a little time to do it. I was worried as a Geno fan, as a Seahawks fan, although we did lock up the 49ers, so I was, you know, feeling some mixed feelings, me and Mark, at that.
We were never too worried. I was never.
True sportsman.
I was never crazy.
Three of us.
That's right. Good job, right. Gravedigger. I knew
Graver
they were.
Pulls even within 7 games of 500.
I think you're officially eliminated. You have to be by this point.
I am
There's
eliminated,
only 3 games left.
Do
we keep voting,
a positive,
by the way?
Record.
Do we keep the people that are eliminated, do they keep locking?
Yeah, that's what we've done in the past.
Is that how sports works? I feel like you've been eliminated. We'll see you next season.
It's like the NFL regular season. You keep...
the playoffs.
You could still get up to fifth or
take me
whatever.
Out of it. What do I need to be
sure.
here this for?
Yeah, I think you've eliminated yourself.
Out of
out of self-respect.
If you don't want to do it anymore, if it's important to you to get back to 500 or whatever... Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe I'll do one more.
In fairness to Justin, I think everyone's kept picking to the end.
I'm 9-10.
Let's just keep it going.
Right now, I'm one game out.
What were you saying?
I knew we were in trouble when Purdy, when he broke out of the pocket, and he did some of those Zach Wilson plays where he's doing the you know, turns his back and just starts running around. You get worried, but he usually gets out of it. But at one point, he broke to his left, and he did sort of like a high step to the sideline. I think it was Cody Barton coming. And I was like, did he just put like a hesitation high step move
feeling himself.
On Barton? Like, they're in trouble.
He did miss like Deebo Samuel, who was wide open in the middle of the field. He made a couple un-Purdy-like decisions.
The first two or three drives.
I'll call him un-Purdy-like at this point because he's not done that in these other games.
After the first two or three drives, though, I thought he played a great game.
Yeah.
It just was kind of early nerves, I think.
And I could say this because I'm very experienced in this world. Call it legacy scarring. With young quarterbacks, coaching matters. And general setup matters, the scheme that you're putting him into. I'm not saying if Zach Wilson was in San Francisco, he'd be thriving right now, but I bet he'd be a hell of a lot better than he has been with the Jets. Mac Jones is a perfect example in New England. He was in a functional offense last year. It was set up much better for him to be successful, and he was successful. You took some of those elements out of play, and Mac Jones all of a sudden looked like a guy that was a borderline starter or worse. This is not a knock on Purdy, but he hit the lotto. He really did.
He did.
He hit the lotto.
But I think I'm not willing to take something away from Purdy by saying, I know you're not advocating for Zach Wilson, but Zach Wilson is Zach Wilson. Purdy is something totally unexpected. And I think a lot of it has to do with his preparation, the person, the locker room absolutely adores him. I mean, they just don't even seem surprised by his progress. This is the human being of Purdy versus just fill-in-the-blank quarterback.
I do push back, but it's just, to me, this is the story of this juggernaut. In a rare case in the NFL where a coach and a GM are allowed to have a vision over a long period of time, and we've seen it reach the Super Bowl. We've seen it reach the NFC Championship game, but it feels like this is like the full culmination of everything they've been doing. They're nasty. They're going to be set up next year. I think Geno Smith's going to be set up next year too. Quickly, we do have sound since we're saying goodbye to him. I don't think we're saying goodbye to him as a member of the Seahawks though.
I want to finish my career in Seattle. I want to be here. The town, the city, the team, Coach Carroll, the organization, they all embraced me. You know, I was a guy who probably could have been out of the league. They embraced me, and I want to repay them for that.
Between that comment and Pete Carroll really going hard on, like, after the game, saying Geno Smith has shown us what level of quarterback he is, and there's only reason to think he can get better, and they ask him a question, and he's like, I want him. I just think they'll be able to find some sort of contractual compromise. And our guy Ian Rapoport said that they would be willing to use the franchise tag to keep him if they needed to. So even just hearing that, it seems like I think there's enough common ground there between the two sides to get a deal
done. Who loves Geno more outside of you, Greg, than Pete Carroll? And who's shown more faith from the start outside of you, Greg, than Pete Carroll? And it's like, I think you can find a way. You're looking always for that rookie quarterback on a contract. You build a team around him. But you
Wait
can.
A second.
What?
Wait a second here. I thought it was I want to repay them for that. That makes you think, is he looking to take, would he take a hometown discount because this is his one chance to get paid on the open market, Geno? And
I think that is sort of what it said, that maybe he's not going to push the issue.
You can't tell me that the Seahawks are seriously thinking about paying him $45 million on a one-year deal next year.
It's 30. It's a big difference.
30 is not bad at all for a guy.
But the thing, even just having that out there that they might be willing to use it, just is a starting point where I don't even think we'll talk about it in the offseason.
Okay,
that they'll need to get to that point.
You don't get to a franchise on a quarterback unless there's some discord or you can't agree on stuff. I think Geno in the Seahawks candidate would be in a contract like that would not blow the ceiling off the joint.
It's like a 2-year thing with 45 guaranteed or something.
I know
like
there's different like levels of franchise tag. I'm just going off CBS here. The 2023 exclusive quarterback franchise tag currently projects to $45.248 million.
That's exclusive, which means like no team can give up two first-round picks.
So they wouldn't give him an exclusive tag.
No, because no one's.
I mean, no one's doing
that
for Geno
Smith. And that knocks it down to 30.
I believe that's around
that. That was another edition of Sipping on Vino, Checking on Geno.
I mean, big season of that.
32,
absolutely.
By the way.
A lot of Vino.
Roughly. We don't have the official numbers, but it'd be roughly 32.
All right, there you go. Let's take a break, and we will hit the Saturday night barn burner. In Duval.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
My first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boog. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be
That's
my
day. That's my day.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.
All right, welcome back. This stuff is interesting to me, so just to circle back here with the franchise tag, the exclusive tag, teams must offer the selected player a one-year contract no less than either the average of the top five salaries at that player's position based on April of the current year or 120% of the player's previous year's salary, whichever is greater. The non-exclusive is teams must offer the selected player a one-year contract no less than the average of the top five cap hits of that player's position or 120 of the player's previous salary, whichever is greater.
I don't think we're getting there with
obviously
him.
That's significantly different cap hits.
It's going to be a
salary.
It's going to be a conversation with the quarterback we're going to talk about that played on Sunday.
Big time, bro. There you go. Big time. But first, let's finish up the Saturday night schedule, and it is a game that started out as a blowout and then turned into a majestic comeback. From a Florida team.
Cook puts it down. Patterson's kick is up. The field goal is good! 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 The Jaguars have won it! The Jaguars have won it! They have come back from 27-0 to win the game! And
just made it
on.
In there.
How good is that?
Hey, Frank Frangie, that's real good.
It's great.
And you get the bungos.
Yes, you do.
As a result.
2 weeks in a row, I think.
Oh, man, if Graber did not give the Jags the bungos out of spite.
No, he's good at that.
Titans fans.
He's got integrity.
It got even worse for Titans fans.
We'll get to the Gravedigger and some Titans stuff a little later in this.
Got even worse.
I thought we banned the Titans. But now we're right back in it.
Frank Frangie with the call, WOKV. And that's how you call that game. We're going to get to another favorite of ours a little bit later, too. So there it is. The field goal is good. Riley Patterson just sneaks it inside the upright. And it allows the Jacksonville Jaguars to escape with a 31-30 win over the Chargers. One of the great comebacks in the history of the sport. This was a Jaguar team that lost the turnover battle 5-0. And Trevor Lawrence threw 4 picks in the first half. And they were down 27-0. And yet they find a way. And Mark, you and I have been doing this a long time, and you may remember the January 2014 Andrew Luck game against the Chiefs, sure. Where they were down 28 points. And after a really bad first half, Andrew Luck went nuts and threw for 443 and 4 touchdowns in that game. And who is the player that Trevor Lawrence has been compared to entering the league? It was Andrew Luck. This was a generational quarterback with a monster performance that will never be forgotten.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, a lesser team, I mean, this is a team with zero playoff experience across the board, players that weren't even in the league a couple years ago. And you could just look around the NFL and see teams that would have crumbled after that first half. And this Jaguars team, whether it's Doug Peterson or Trevor Lawrence, is made of something different.
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
Not tonight. I think the feelings are opposite. You come out of this game with it being about the loser for a lot of reasons, which we'll get to. This reminded me of, obviously for other reasons, that Colts-Vikings game. And something that we were texting about in that Colts-Vikings game where you said, Dan, if the Vikings can just get a touchdown before halftime, mm-hmm. all the mistakes mm-hmm. they've made have happened in such an abbreviated amount of time. Because as I was watching Trevor Lawrence throw pick after pick, it was like, this is a disaster, except this isn't in the third or fourth quarter. This is happening so early that there's so much time to work your way out of this if you can pull it together. And I want to just point to one thing that I thought that was very indicative of the last week plus with the Chargers. And it was when they were up 27-0. And it was a third and one for the Chargers at their own 27. And Justin Herbert planned down, audible to a planned down jet sweep. And I mentioned this because it was the play where Michael Bandy came around. There was a botch job on third down. They were forced to punt, and the Jaguars took the ensuing drive into the touchdown, into the end zone, 27-7. And suddenly, after all this nightmarishness, you're only down by 20 with a half to go. And on that play, it was initially, you know, weeks ago, it would be Mike Williams who would have done the jet sweep. Okay. And so first of all,
Mark
you're
tied it all together.
Well, you got you're Joe
fat
Lombardi
bow and put it on a card for Christmas. Well, Merry Christmas,
Joe
honey.
Lombardi, and you kept the play in the playbook. Bad idea, because it was DeAndre Carter who was Mike Williams' yeah. backup who would have done this. But DeAndre Carter was injured by the time that play happened. And so you get Michael Bandy, who Herbert mentioned after the game was Michael Bandy didn't even know what he was supposed to be doing on that play. So that is a coaching disaster mixed with a situational disaster mixed with a mistake by a team that couldn't hold on to a lead, and it opened up the doorway for a Jaguars squad that walked right back in.
How good is that?
I had to go back to like rewatch how this all happened, and that was one of the plays where you thought, if they just got a yard on this play, they're going to win that game.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to say, but I really think they would have. They would have ended the first half. If Herbert had hit a wide open Allen when they were up 24-0. Herbert played pretty well in this game for the most part, made a lot of plays that weren't there. Certainly his life was harder, I think, than Trevor Lawrence was in terms of he was really having to work for tough plays, but misses that throw. Then you think about the Joey Bosa mistakes. Like, I can't remember a single player having a bigger meltdown, lining up in the neutral zone on a play where they got a sack and would have forced Jacksonville to kick a field goal when they were trying to make that comeback was another 4-point play. Then he had the penalty, obviously left to the 2-point conversion. Like, we can go through all the plays that they messed up, but it's like the other team also has to take advantage of it, and Jacksonville did the whole freaking time. And I'm just so impressed by Doug Peterson and Lawrence and Trent Baalke, especially, like, every single one of their free agent pickups from last season. And everyone's wearing the Baalke clown nose to the stadium. Like, all their leading receivers, and then Foley Fatukasi with the biggest play on defense of the game. All free agents that weren't on the team a year ago.
Let the Jaguars serve as the ultimate example. No matter how downtrodden you are, things can change quickly in the league. It helps when you have a generational talent, a quarterback hit the scene. And after making the worst hire of the decade in Urban Meyer, you make perhaps one of the best when it's all said and done in Doug Peterson, who I thought was amazing in this game. Everything he did was the right call. And the Joey Bosa play after the touchdown, it would have pulled them, the extra point after the score would have pulled them within three. An obvious extra point situation.
And he gets a second penalty for arguing with the refs.
So Bosa loses his cool, gets the second penalty, having the distance of the 2 point for the point after, and he goes for two, which let's be fair, because we'd probably be giving him something right now if they didn't get it done. But that was faith in his offense, faith in his players and his scheme, and they convert that, and it's kind of unheard of to have onions at that level to then set it up where when you do get the ball back, you're winning the game with a field goal, which they did. So Peterson,
that's a big analytics thing, and you say it's unheard of, but Doug Peterson Pearson was doing a lot back in 2017 with that team, too. It's crazy.
It reminds you that
it's happening in the playoffs. It's just I just have a lot of respect for it. Let's hear from Pearson talking about Trevor Lawrence and who he reminds him of.
I played with one of the greatest quarterbacks ever in Brett Favre, and there were times when, you know, he didn't have a great first half and came back in the second half and could light it up. And that's what I love about Trevor and his demeanor and his aggressiveness and the ability to just forget and move on. But he'll be the first one to tell you that it's not about him. It's the guys around him too. Made plays. Protection was good. Receivers were doing a nice job being where they needed to be. But from an individual standpoint, it was this is really a great performance by our quarterback.
I think that we saw Trevor Lawrence, because we mentioned it on the show a bunch, go through sort of a psychological shift in that London game where it's like, I'm not going to be the same Trevor Lawrence. I'm going to be someone new. And that's been the case. But it's also coaching, because if you're Doug Pearson, and he was like best friends with Brett Favre, I mean, his backup forever. Like, you have so many anecdotes and stories of one of the greats melting and being like, Trevor, you're going to be fine. And like, you felt that with Trevor Lawrence, but it was also schematic because the Chargers and Brandon Staley were adequately, you know, praised for using all sorts of disguise coverages against Trevor Lawrence early on in the game. And if you look at Trevor Lawrence's numbers against disguise coverage, it falls off a shelf. He's not the same guy. But Pearson countered in the second half with a rash of hurry-up snaps. And of their 15 hurry-up snaps, 12 came in the second half. They averaged 10.5 yards per play. Lawrence had three passes of 20 or more yards. They all came out of no huddle snaps.
That was just like him winning over Staley, essentially.
So a year ago, you had a coach in Urban Meyer, and it's not just a rip on Urban Meyer that's too easy, but who has none of those anecdotes of a quarterback dating back to his own playing days, and had no concept schematically how to help Trevor Lawrence. Everything is new for tangible reasons with Doug Pearson.
Right, and like all
that's a good point you made, Mark.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mark. That's a good point, Mark.
All that sets up 1:27 left, 4th-and-1. And despite it all feeling inevitable, they did get to a spot at 1:27, 4th-and-1, where if you don't get a yard, the Chargers are going to win the game anyways, and the Jaguars are getting ready to snap the ball, and Doug Pearson runs in with to me is one of the most memorable timeouts that I can remember, because it totally turned the game. He didn't
Damn,
like
I
what
thought
he
you were
saw.
Gonna go with some Rosenthal hyperbole.
I was gonna say of all
one
time.
Of the greatest timeouts of all time.
I mean, sure, throw it up
Do
there.
It.
How many timeouts could be better than that? You basically won a playoff game with that, but he didn't like what he saw in that moment, uses the timeout, comes out of it with that beautiful play where it ends up being ETN, where they like basically have him one-on-one on Asante Samuel Jr. Good luck with that. And they stuck with the run during that comeback. I just was so impressed, but we wouldn't be talking about Lawrence or Pearson if the defense hadn't like started that comeback for them. It was such a great example of like that it's a team sport, because the Jaguars quietly stopped the Chargers in the second quarter on three straight three and outs while Lawrence is still throwing interceptions, 4 for 16 for 30 yards and 4 interceptions at one point. And in the middle of the second quarter, that's really where the comeback started. They stopped him three straight three and outs, including after that muffed punt that they got over at the 6. So it's like it's a team game, and the defense really stepped up too down the stretch. They rushed the passer.
What a
mess. Yes, they did. And let's hear from the Chargers now a little bit, because this is for a star-crossed organization, the Chargers going to charger and all that. I mean, the fact that that was a major part of the discourse on Twitter, even when they were way ahead, there was almost a general confidence that this game was going to be close. I think anybody watching it, just because this is what this organization has always done, I guess it doesn't matter. They always say it's just the laundry. But why do certain teams seem to have this type of stink that follows them through the decade? A crushing loss. Here's Derwin James, their star safety, asked about his feeling after the game.
This is tough because you guys are a unit. You guys have been connected. Can you put it into words?
I don't even have any words for it right now. Like I said, I've been playing football 21 years, and I ain't never felt like this.
And now here is the other star of the defense, superstar of the defense, Joey Bosa, who, as we said, had a very tough game. I'm going to have this in two parts because they're very distinct. Here is part one.
I need to be more accountable for my actions, obviously, but
it's a heated game, and I'm hurting out there. I'm playing on half a leg. I'm getting dragged to the ground, whatever. Could hurt me, along with screwing our team. And yeah, maybe some of them weren't as blatant as I thought, but I don't know.
And then Joey Bosa says, F it. I don't care if there's a FedEx package on my stool on Monday.
I think there just needs to be more accountability on. I mean, if I say something to them, I get a $40,000 fine. But if they blow a call that ruins an entire team's season, they get to, they're probably back in the locker room after the game like, I got that. Oh, yeah, got him 15 yards with a loser. I guarantee it. That's what they're talking like in the back.
How do you know?
Whatever,
I mean,
he guaranteed it.
I'm sick of those people. I mean, got my third F-bomb so far. Sorry, but man.
Oof. I kind of love it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, some of the calls are bad. And I have to say, like, and you're going to see it. You're going to see the think pieces in the days ahead. The officiating, which has been under the microscope because it has not been good this year. It wasn't good this weekend either. And these are supposed to be the best crews in the game. And I'm not saying all the officiating was bad, but I feel like every game there were major calls that were missed.
I felt like Saturday was a disaster and Sunday was good.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. There was a particularly egregious call in Minnesota that gave the Vikings life on their last drive.
When they are jumping in and using some of their ability to quickly replay stuff and get it right, there at least is that. Because, I mean, I know it seems worse than ever, but I can remember a playoff game back in like the 90s where it's like a missed call just led to a team losing. And it's like there was I agree with Bosa that like the refs do it and then we complain about it for 2 days and then they're essentially anonymous individuals and they go on to do their job the next week. But we all remember Joey Bosa melting down.
Right. We know the Chargers season's over and they're chokers. And
I understand his frustration.
But it was like non-holding calls. And I didn't think they were crazy. Bosa and Mac definitely did not show up in the second half of the game. And that it's part of what's frustrating for him is that it really was more on the defense in the second half. The offense weirdly had its problems in the first half while they were getting a huge lead. But the offense, which everyone shares in a blame like this, Brandon Staley does, Herbert does, the offense does. But to go touchdown, 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 field goal. Well, the one thing the offense did in the second half was actually go on longer drives and limit possessions to the point where the Jaguars had to pitch a perfect game in the second half. Because they
I
only
don't like
got,
this, Greg. I'm I just don't saying, like this. No, I know no, no, you're, no. You're a very vocal member of the Herbert Hive, and that's a very loud group in the Twitterverse. But they scored 3 points in the second half. And you even said it on
but
Thursday.
But my point
Greg.
Is, though, they go 7 for 37, 7 for 45, 14 for 53. You got to do better than score 3 points and then go three and out in that spot. They collapse. But in a comeback like this, kind of like that Minnesota game we were talking about, like how many things had to go wrong, they limited it to where they had to score a touchdown and then the game-winning field goal exactly on every single one of those drives, and they got a touchdown
can I,
in every
can I just
single
count you with one
it
thing,
was a
though?
Meltdown.
There are moments, and like we're talking about Trevor Lawrence, the way we're talking about, we're forgiving 4 interceptions because of how he bounced back. And I don't think it's a Justin Herbert thing as much as like the Joe Lombardi experience. I'm not sure where the argument is to continue with on with that for another year.
I think
but
he
they
gets
had,
fired.
They had the ball with 5+, and they had a chance to seal this thing. They went 3 and out. There are just these drives that matter. And like the whole second half, you're right, there were some elongated drives, but it ended in a punt, a field goal, and Cameron Dicker's second missed field goal like in a million years.
That was
years.
A huge miss, too.
That was a
years,
huge miss. That's
yards.
A special teams issue.
And that
but
was
then
Staley
that final
losing,
3 and out.
I think Staley got absolutely spooked from the chuckleheads like us banging on him for not going for fourth downs last year. And you saw multiple games this week won because you went for it on fourth down. And that weirdly doesn't get mentioned as much as when it goes wrong. But Staley did the opposite. You kick field goals from the 4-yard line, the 5-yard line, and then when Dicker missed that kick, he had a 4th and 3 with under 8 minutes to go, where a first down there would have been just absolutely huge. Didn't have the guts to go for it, was going to at first, changed his mind. They missed the field goal. And
you're Justin Herbert.
I'm not throwing Herbert off under the bus, but I don't think he didn't play well, but he also didn't play poorly. He just had like a block game.
Here's my point. I love Herbert. Maybe not at the genuflect level, but I see him as one of the great young talents in the league. But I think sometimes there's because the discourse around him is it's almost like the political landscape where it's just people just mad yelling about Herbert, where it's like, man, like we talked that Thursday, you, because you're a big Herbert guy, and you said, well, the reason the Chargers win is because they have the best quarterback, and you're going to see that here. I only saw one special quarterback of the future in this game, and I'm not taking away from Herbert. I still think he's excellent. I wish he was on my team. But I thought, I'm watching Lawrence, and I'm thinking, we're going to see this guy in the playoffs for 15 years. That's a Hall of Fame player just starting his career. And I just thought, like, on that stage, Lawrence was special and Herbert wasn't.
Well, it's so funny looking at their stats, because like it's crazy how similar they were. They both inefficient. They each threw it about, you know, Herbert threw it 43 times for 273. Lawrence threw it 47 times for 288. Herbert has the one touchdown, no interceptions. Lawrence, and I love that callback you had to Andrew Luck, had the four touchdowns, four interceptions. That was just like Luck's game. He threw three in that game, right, and then wind up throwing four. So there were ups and there were downs. I do think it's fair, though, to point out that the Chargers run it 25 times for 50 yards, and the Jaguars have a great running game. That Lawrence has a great play caller who has a sense of the moment and schemes guys wide open. Herbert has Lombardi, who puts three tight ends on the field for a play-action pass to start that last drive, and Zion Johnson loses a block one-on-one, their first-round pick, and gives up a quick pressure. Like, I don't think that it's remotely even.
His coaching is not good.
I would also say that Herbert has a head coach who played Mike Williams and his starters deep into the season finale when it was an utterly meaningless task to do so. Explain it off in a weird way, and then if you look at Keenan Allen's numbers when Mike Williams has not been in the lineup this year, they fall off a cliff, and your leading receiver is your tight end in the biggest playoff game of your life.
If you take these two things, these three things, the fact that Staley in general has been an underwhelming head coach since being hired, two, the devastating decision to play his starters week 18 and then lose his biggest playmaker for the playoff game, and then three, for his team to blow a 27-0 lead, you would think, oh, Staley's going to get fired. Jim Trotter, who's really plugged in, veteran reporter for NFL Network, who knows that team very well, has been around them and covering them for years, did a Twitter thread today where he outlined his thoughts on how this thing could play out, and that, to him, it seemed like Staley, there's a good chance he would survive. Maybe not the offensive coordinator, but Staley would be safe. And I know that's not what Chargers fans who are in their feelings right now want to hear, but that's what Trotter thinks.
Well, one of the reasons was because the linking Sean Payton to LA, it's like the way the Chargers operate, it's not because they're miserly, according to Trotter. I mean, I think a lot of people think that, but there is a salary issue with someone like Payton. They want to play. They want to pay first-time coaches and coordinators to become head coaches, but they don't want to give up the draft picks. They want to use those to develop players. I mean, that's a choice. It's a choice. I don't know if I agree with it, but
this brings me no joy, because this man has seriously been one of my favorite broadcasters in my life. But Al, I think we're going to look back at this game as maybe the beginning of the end for Al. Michaels, who terrible job, by the way, by NBC. I kind of pointed this out on Thursday that it wasn't with Herb Street, and I know that's different because that's Amazon, but you don't throw two guys together that don't have a lot of experience. You certainly don't throw two older guys together when you don't have somebody that's an excitable presence. And that's why I know Collinsworth is not a favorite of yours, Mark, but Collinsworth does bring that kind of joyfulness to the sport, and you hear his excitement, and that plays off well with Al Michaels. Al and Tony Dungy, who Tony Dungy's like paint drying, listening to his voice. Here is the final call of the game in one of the greatest comebacks in the history of the sport.
Here we go for the win. Got it, but there's a flag down. There's a flag down as everybody's running out onto the field, but there's a penalty marker, and they call it on the defense.
Unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. Patterson boots them into the divisional round.
I love Damn. Al Michaels.
Damn. Yeah. You're really twisting the knife. I mean, I agree with
I'm
you.
I'm sorry, Greg. Oh, I'm sorry to offend you, your sensibilities.
No, I mean, of course I agree with you.
How am I twisting the knife? I'm just calling it like it is.
We're like listening to the call.
Can I say one thing?
Well,
because
it was a lot of people were talking about it.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, I am with you before the game even started, and I'm with you now.
I totally agree that you need to pair him with someone that's going to bring more energy. I think that it was I was asking myself all football game. Why did they put these two together? But when it comes to Chris Collinsworth, it's his. It is the voice. It's not his analysis. I think he's a great analyst, but it's like he's a little folksy, and his voice gets on my nerves. That's more of a aesthetic.
I just wish that Al was given someone that would make him.
Why are
bring
they jamming?
Best.
Why are they jamming?
I don't need to hear Tony. I don't need.
Why
you
are
know
jamming
what?
Dungy
I don't need to
there?
Hear from Tony Dungy on anything. Check out his record on opinions on other things in the world. Mm. Now you have me in a booth in the best game of the year. Al's 78 years old. I hope Al has a long career ahead of him still. I just wonder if we'll look back as like, oh.
It wasn't Dungy, though, botching like the confusion of like the balls at the 1 yard line, but it's still the 2 point
conversion. It's not helping
after
out though.
The penalty.
Finally, before we move off this game,
sad.
Another tough night. Al had a tough night. So did our producer, who tweeted this when things were going all Chargers. Justin Graver at Titans Film Room. Hashtag Titans for maximum clout engagement were incredibly boring all year. No one wanted to see them in the playoffs over Jacksonville, but I promise you, Titans Chargers would have been a better game than this. Hissing venom. Hissing venom, Gravedigger.
I should have said a better half than this, huh? How about that?
That would have worked. I mean,
how about just keep the Titans out of the discourse?
No, this was for Titans fans
That's
who
your
were
brand.
Like complaining
yeah.
that the Titans shouldn't have even tried to make the playoffs.
But now you have a national, international platform as the producer of this program. People are going to see that and amplify that and come back at you.
It's amazing. My tweet got over 1,000 likes, and I owned the tweet.
He's I got the clout. That's all I needed.
I quote tweeted myself, and I said I played myself or whatever that.
That was
gives.
Good job. You kept it up, and then you made a joke about yourself. That's good.
I'm not going to delete the tweet. It's up there, whatever. It was 27-0 when I tweeted that.
Haven't you gotten to play? Aren't we at the point now where have you thought about tweeting something in the first half of a game like this
yes.
where it's a declarative, and then you're like, yeah, wait a minute. With this, the way the NFL is, it's like, I'm not tweeting this because it's going to go south in like an hour and a half.
Big leads aren't what they used to be.
Absolutely. I was literally thinking, like, Staley's defense is built to, like, force teams into passing all the time. Like, that's what he's been trying to build. It's like,
then you're dealing with that for the next, you know, 72 hours.
Lesson learned, but you know what? I regret nothing. It was
there
fun.
You go. That's how you look at it. Let's take a break and we'll move on.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. You can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never see me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to
do my game. That's my game.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.
All right, welcome back. So we move to Sunday now, and Mark, you had a sandwich prop earlier this season that the fastest game ever would be played. I don't know if this was the longest playoff game ever today that was a regulation game, but it had to be close. Dolphins, Bills, it felt like it was going to be a blowout, but it turned into anything but.
Allen letting it go down to two. Now one takes the snap, hands it off to Singletary. Over the block of his left tackle, he moves the pile toward the 35. Out toward the first down marker, he may have gotten it. How about that? That'll be the ball game. They signal first down, and the Bills can go to victory formation.
Wow. That's hard to believe.
How about the effort by Devin Singletary?
And the old lineman pushing him.
I don't know if we need to, when we have our end of season meeting, Justin, or like, how do we make the show better? Because it's the right call.
Could it be? Is it possible it could be better?
To make our show better?
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I think we made the right pick. Like, what is the highlight for the game? Like, oh, that's the clinching first down. But I'm finding all season, whenever we get the clinching first down, just doesn't have the juice.
I think the fourth down stop, I don't know how that call was, the drive
we
before.
Checked it.
I'd be with you
we
on that.
We checked it, and it was about the same, if not a little worse, maybe.
You know what? Maybe it's a lesson. Maybe just go with the great Gabe Davis, Josh Allen touchdown. Who cares if it was in the third quarter? It was a touchdown. It was exciting.
When we break bread after the season, these are the things we'll discuss respectfully.
We'll get it right heading into year 11 or 12 or whatever it is. So,
Devin Singletary's 7-yard run for first down was the play that the Bills desperately needed to survive against Skylar Thompson and the Miami Dolphins. The final score, Bills 34, Dolphins 31. So they advance. Josh Allen, despite three more turnovers, he said it after the game, 1 week seasons, man, that's it. All that matters is surviving and advancing. Doesn't matter how we win. It's if we win. And, Greg, they did win, but it wasn't supposed to go like that. Go like this, even though they were up 17-0.
No. They will be happy to move on from the Miami portion of the season. All three of these games were funky. I know Tua played the other two games, and the Dolphins' offense certainly looked better in those games, but this was a game where I think Josh Allen and the Bills' offense were really the problem. Even though they got 423 yards in this game, Allen was a roller coaster. They were daring him to throw the ball down the field all game, and he obliged, and sometimes it worked. That touchdown throw to Diggs early was just an incredible throw no one else can throw. The touchdown to Gabe Davis was an incredible throw when he absolutely needed a first down on 3rd and 6 in the red zone, and they were trailing in this game to the Dolphins. They call the quarterback run. He picks it up and hits Beasley for a touchdown. Like, there were good things. But he had two interceptions and three fumbles, and it was kind of all over the place, and they were stopped in a number of occasions where they could have put the game away. It was not what you expect out of the Bills' offense.
I think if we go back for a second to, like, the Seahawks game, it's like, this is what Seattle's defense, if you were the Dolphins, needed to do against the Niners to create the chance, a doorway to win, because the first interception leads to a field goal. The second one, which really bounced off Cole Beasley, led to a touchdown. And then you have a strip sack fumble touchdown. Like, points are coming from a Dolphins defense that I kind of think, and I thought Romo explained it well, is like, we just want to put Josh Allen into chaos. We know he's going to make big plays out of it, but he's going to make what we've seen of late and earlier in his career, Josh Allen-esque turnovers. And they've been coming in bunches. They're not all on him like any interception we see, but...
But he's lucky they didn't lose those last two fumbles he had.
Absolutely.
It could have been a different game.
Absolutely. I mean, this thing was close, though. We were in the middle of the fourth quarter. I know that the Dolphins got a touchdown at one point on offense. So it's like the Bills' defense played a pretty crazily amazing game against, I thought they should have, against this team. I think it goes back to the fact that Raheem Mostert was not in this game. The way he ran on Buffalo last time, they had no ground game. And in the situation they were in, if they could have sustained some drives and kept Buffalo off the field a few more times and just had some way to move the ball more, they had like 80% of their drives went for like less than 15 yards. I mean, Skylar Thompson was largely a disaster until he made a couple throws late. I mean, this was Buffalo's defense did its job. It's just that it was a truly funky game. And I look at it, I kind of agree with Josh Allen in this one. It doesn't make me totally think differently about Buffalo. They're operating, it seems like, at about 78% of their power. But this felt like a weird odyssey with no major, larger purpose to me because they did escape.
All right. So a lot to unpack there. So Skylar Thompson, I thought he was 18 of 45 for 220, a touchdown, two interceptions. I thought he was actually better than that. I think they had some drops. Waddle had a terrible drop early on in the game. He had another
Waddle
later.
Was hurt.
Waddle is injured. He's banged up. But I thought Thompson actually considering what we had seen to him this to this point, acquitted himself fairly well. Now, that said, they had 231 yards of offense.
In 14 drives, a lot of drives.
In 14 drives. They had 16 first downs and 14 drives. So the Bills' defense did what they were supposed to do. And I guess I disagree with Josh Allen. I'm concerned about the Bills a little bit. Because,
well, but his mentality is going to be different than ours. Our job is
sure.
to pick
so
on the
throw
part
him
a little
out
bit.
Of it. I'm concerned about the Bills just because, like, I don't think they look good against the Patriots in Week 18. Naheem Himes kind of bailed them out with those two big kickoff returns. I thought you saw breakdowns in pass protection. The offensive line struggled in this game. Breakdowns in special teams. You saw more bad decision-making by your star quarterback. You saw big drops by Buffalo as well. And that's the only reason this game was close. Not because Miami played well. To me, it was because the Bills just were sloppy. And playing at 75%, you'll beat Skylar Thompson's Dolphins at mm-hmm. home.
Yep.
You will get your doors blown off next week. Who do they have next week?
Bengals.
They get Cincinnati, and I know Cincinnati wasn't perfect on Sunday either, but you need to be much sharper. This is your year, Buffalo. Like, this is it. The window is not infinite. You need to start playing better or else.
I don't assume it's their year, that's all. I just will say that. I know we've been saying that forever, and it's just like queuing them up is the best team around, and like, they just Josh Allen does amazing things, and you can forgive his mistakes, but his mistakes are plentiful right now.
When like it's a fair point. Like, we think of the Bills one way, and they used to have Micah Hyde and Von Miller. Those are really important players. Mm. I'm not everyone's got injuries right now, but it's been a while, I guess, since we've seen the Bills team that we imagine them to be.
Right, that Week 17 game that disappeared because of the DeMar Hamlin situation right. would have been a really good litmus test, and we never saw how that even played out.
They had that Bears game where they ended up winning easy, but even that game was messy. They were trailing. The Dolphins game was nip and tuck. They had the Jets game where the Jets actually like outgained them. The Lions game on Thanksgiving, like, they are a team that is battling to win, and I think if they win this Super Bowl, if they keep winning these games, it's not going to look pretty. It's going to have to be with Allen being superhuman. I'm a little concerned about their offensive line in general. They had some pretty good blitz pickups early, but as the game went on, they lost more and more consistently up front.
And then on the Dolphins side, they have some regrets after this game as well, because they did not play as sharp as they needed to play. This was especially apparent with a number of either delay of game penalties or having to burn timeouts, which really burned them late.
All three timeouts.
All three timeouts because yeah. of the inability to get calls in from the sideline, and you don't know what the issue is. Now, there was one specific play with the game essentially on the line. They were facing 4th and 1 from their own 48-yard line with 2:28 to play. Again, and they didn't have their timeouts at this point, so this was do or die. They failed to get a playoff in time. They got flagged for a delay of game. The penalty pushed them back to 4th and 6, and then they could not complete the pass. Here's what McDaniel said about that play afterwards, citing a communication gaffe at the biggest stage of the season.
It was communicated to me through the upstairs.
I love this guy.
You know, from the headset, I think. I was standing by an official. I had just had gotten convicted information that it was a first down, so I don't really know exactly who it was from. It was probably the first time all year that had happened, so you try to do your best. As it was, I thought we had a 4th and 6 opportunity that we were unable to come up with as well, so 4th and 1... most of the time is easier than 4th and 6, but at the same time, you just have to adjust to whatever variable is put out there.
That wasn't a great look all the way around, the entire operation and the presser, in my opinion.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, that's a total breakdown, and you don't want to see that happen. But from a maybe a little bit more of a global viewpoint on what McDaniel went through with his team, I mean, you're dealing with Skylar Thompson, who essentially was a preseason player. And yeah, things are getting funky in these key situations. If that happened to him, if he got the wrong information, he said it's the first time all season.
But that
that's
doesn't explain all the other times.
Look at Brock Purdy in San Francisco.
I would just say that Mike McDaniel, like, the fact that, you know, he was like, oh, will Mike McDaniel at some point be replaced if they want Sean Payton or fill in the blank coach?
Oh, that was
like,
always silly.
Wait, I agree, but I think Mike McDaniel on his own proved that he fought through incredible adversity. I mean, three times they played Buffalo, they beat them once. The night game a month ago was they were saucy. They hung in there and showed something that very few Dolphins teams we've ever covered showed. And then today, when no one gave them a chance, rightfully, based on who was starting at quarterback and who was out, and you got this.
Right. I totally agree that, like, in the moment, that shortcoming was very frustrating because it was throughout the second half. And Skylar Thompson probably deserves some of the blame, but it feels like it's more on the coaching that it was just everything was taking too long. But I was taken by his quarter or post-halftime interview. You know, he was so confident. Like, and Romo and Nance said that too, that they really thought they were going to go in there and win this game. And they were really close to doing it. And they did get to the playoffs in the end. I know they fell down the stretch, but we know he can scheme up offense. And I'm with you. I think you have to at least give him some credit for them believing. Like, I think he's doing a better job at the sort of global coaching. And I think having, like, his team believe in him and the coaches and everything like that than I expected. He's not just, like, a scheme guy.
Like, there was one team that Romo talked about getting. It was sort of, like, weird vibes, jitters, and kind of on edge, and it was the Bills. It wasn't the Dolphins. And I get it, the stakes are different for Buffalo than Miami in theory, but like...
Yeah, there wasn't... I mean, Miami was in that enviable position of no one's given us a chance, and you sense that. McDaniel's an interesting guy still to me, and we'll get into all this down the road, but his offense was brilliant for half the year. The other half, not so much. There's quarterback issues. It was reported today that the team plans to have Tua back next season. Hopefully, health will allow that to happen for Tua and the head injuries he suffered. But you know, McDaniels brought in, viewed as a offensive visionary. You got to put it all together, and you're going to maybe get some better luck, of course, at quarterback health. We'll see. Miami's an interesting team next year. Right now, their season is over. And
I'm glad in the end the Bills, you know, get it done.
Yeah, we didn't need the Miami Dolphins around for another week. I did lock up the Bills, and it got a little. I was never like the way McDaniels was confident. I remained confident throughout the game. It was going to be all right. It was one point when they fell behind in the second half, and then the Bills had like a three and out, and they're punting
again.
That was
a little concerning.
Like,
yeah,
like what are you guys doing? Like, it would have been a catastrophe for Buffalo to go one and done in this situation.
I'm with you, though. I thought that Buffalo could probably, even like midway through third quarter, like they could still win this game by 20 points.
It was a bad weekend for the games over people on Twitter in general. It's always, it's the same thing as Justin's tweet. Like, this game actually had two of them. Everyone said the game was over at 17-0. We should mention it was 17-0 after, you know, early in the second quarter. And then everyone said it was over again at 34-24 late in the third. And yet there they were at midfield, down three with 2 minutes to go. They were about 15 yards away from tying that game up. It's crazy.
I have one favorite team, as everyone knows, but I really do like this Bills team, especially after the adversity that they've gone through in recent weeks. I want to see them get to the Super Bowl. So I'm happy that they moved on, and I implore them, listen up, guys. We got to go up from 75 to about 90. We got to get over the 90 threshold to make this thing get to the Super Bowl.
And it starts with Josh Allen being the playoff Josh Allen from a year ago. Like, we're not getting that guy right now.
That.
We're just he would say that.
And expectations are high. Anything less than the Super Bowl is failure for this Bills team, whether that feels fair or not. But that's the bar they set after last year's playoffs. So we'll see what happens against Cincinnati. Ooh, boy. All right, let's move on to the next game on the schedule. To U.S. Bank Stadium. Nailed it.
Takes the snap. He's back to throw. He's under pressure. Got hit as he throws. Completes it to his right. But he's short of the first down. It's Hawkinson. Oh. He's wrapped up. What a play by the Giants. They threw it short to Hawkinson. And the Giants rallied to the ball. And Xavier McKinney makes the play of the ball game.
Wow. Giants advance.
Hey, that is great. Oh, it's on.
And Marvage is here. But it's the New York City Marcus.
It can be both.
So true.
People don't understand. It can be both. You don't understand it if you're not from there. Bob Papa with the call. WFN. That's the great Carl Banks.
Great player.
Great
back
player.
In the day.
Oh, yeah. Parcells' favorite. The New York Giants. The G-Men! Get a 300-yard passing day from Daniel Jones. 78 on the ground, too. And just great big plays on both sides of the ball in a 31-24 victory over the Minnesota Vikings. God, there's so much to get to with Minnesota, including Kirk's checkdown pass there with the season on the line. But let this be known that the Minnesota Vikings, and this is only the Vikings, and this has felt like it was going to happen. It felt like it was like set in the stars that they would set an NFL record by going 11-0 in one score games, and then the calendar turned to the playoffs and they lose a one score game in the wild card round. And that is very on brand for the Vikings, and the fan base knows it all too well. But the Giants, Mark Sessler, the G-men, they stepped up and really, I thought, played a beautiful game here, and they're advancing to face the Eagles.
Yeah,
as
I think
a
the Giants were the other team in the NFC that, you know, were largely viewed as fraudulent to some degree, not up to their record all year long, but they were really well coached. And I think that what we're seeing is that Brian Daboll does and has had an effect on Daniel Jones, who played the game of his life. And we were getting here in bits and pieces with Daniel Jones. I think we saw it the last time he played Minnesota, that they basically put it in his hands and said, we're going to throw the ball. It's not going to be one of these 124 passing yard days, and we're going to have you run the ball 12 times. You could do both, but he did it there. He did it again. I thought they took great advantage of a terrible defense. So I do feel for Vikings fans who got to this point watching this defense just utterly collapse early on. The Giants, out of the gate, had 7 plays of 10-plus yards on the first 2 drives. Daniel Jones was all over the place in a beautiful way, hitting everyone. You got guys that people didn't even believe in a month ago making big plays for New York.
These guys were Niners open, by the way, too. The defense was so poor and the scheme for the Giants so effective that Jones was just like,
dialed in. And, you know, they have talked about, and we'll see where this goes with Daniel Jones. They want him back too. We've got that reporting that's been out there for weeks, that they ran a more typical pro passing game where it wasn't just rollouts for Daniel Jones and trying to kind of protect him from stuff he couldn't do, that he's grown in this system and they're having him do more and more. And I know this is the Vikings and it's a bit of an equalizer because they're a mess on in their secondary and against the pass. But Daniel Jones today, like the way you get that version of Daniel Jones and the Giants are a dangerous team. Maybe go out next week and we'll see you later. But this is a major organizational win for everyone involved. They looked really well coached. They came in totally confident. They had a huge amount of yardage and it wasn't all coming from Saquon Barkley. It was coming from other places, which tells me that this offense has grown.
I don't care if this game was against the Arkansas State Red Wolves. Like,
that might make some.
I don't know why they would play that.
Yeah, that would be weird.
Collegiate squad.
He went over 300 yards with 2 passing touchdowns and over 70 yards rushing. He's actually the first player in NFL history to combine those stats in a playoff game.
Really?
Like, yeah. That was a peak Cam Newton game. That was who I was thinking of because, yes, they didn't call a crazy amount of design runs, but they did it, and he scrambled a ton.
Oh,
he was
fantastic.
Scrambling early. He had over 60 rushing yards midway through the second quarter. Then it calmed down, and it was him with his legs if the first guy wasn't open. It was him throwing absolute darts on a couple third and long plays where he was very decisive, and the velocity was there. They had the best players, and they had the best coaches. Like, they won this game because Daboll had guts on fourth down back-to-back times in the fourth quarter. It was a tie game when he went for a fourth and one in the fourth quarter before the game-winning touchdown. And I think it was an obvious call at this point in the NFL because it was like less than a yard, but it wasn't that long ago that would have seemed controversial. Then he went for it again, fourth and short, on his own end in the Giants' last drive. And that ended up helping them burn the Vikings' last couple timeouts, waste some more time. And it would have ended the game if Darius Slayton hadn't dropped a wide-open catch. They would have ended the game with the ball. Instead, they had to count on the defense to finish it off. But, man, that's Daboll, I think, really out-coaching Minnesota's defensive coordinator, who Kevin O'Connell made no promises about Ed Donatell after the game. I thought that was telling.
I mean, yeah, know thy opponent and credit Daboll and the Giants. And they saw these guys on Christmas Eve, and they lit them up on Christmas Eve also. Of course, I mean, yeah, you always attack the Vikings on defense. And the Vikings are one of the strangest teams in recent NFL history. The fact that they went 13-4, but were, you know, relentlessly criticized in many places, including on this podcast, as punching above their weight. And this is exactly kind of what I expected and many of us expected. It would be a go down to the last possession. I thought the Vikings would steal it and find another way to do it, but I knew these teams are even, and that's exactly what this game was. I mean, I think the Giants are going to be in a good position next week against the Eagles because they're going to have a lot of confidence. And Greggy, I know that the Giants are a team that you struggle with based on history, but this is kind of an easy team to root for in the NFC.
One person picked the Giants in this room this week, and it was your boy 60% G. I'm the real Giants fan. The G-man
the same Greg that said the Saints were better than the Giants on the preview show
all
2 weeks ago?
All I'm saying is one person picked the Giants this week, and it was me. Those are the facts.
I had the Giants. I had the Giants ahead
in a certain way
until the last second of the game.
I had the Giants. I had them. No. I believed in this team.
I believe you said the Saints were a better team than the Giants.
I really do, and I've said this on the show the last few weeks, think that they've been a different team the last 4 or 5 weeks. I thought they were lucky to have the record that they had throughout most of the season and that they look better on both sides of the ball. You said it, Mark, with the way the offense is working. Those receivers are established and they are really talented. Like, there's this idea that they're not a talented team. I mean, they have an all-pro left tackle. Daniel Jones is certainly talented. Saquon, they used him great today, 14 for 109. And then you look at their defensive line. Dexter Lawrence was the best player in this game. He dominated his matchup, was in Kirk Cousins' lap all game long. Kayvon Thibodeau had a great game. You have Leonard Williams there. They had a Dory Jackson back. They have good coaches. Like, they're talented with good coaches. I'm buying.
Lawrence, because this happens to, seems to happen like once a week, the roughing the passer call on Dexter Lawrence. Do you remember this from like late in the game where they basically like the crew was like, I'm not sure what else we can ask him to do other than to slowly, quietly.
I think it was because he hit. I don't think they should have called it, but it's because he hit the helmet.
But it was so like some of these roughing the passer.
That was disgraceful. And you know it's bad when they have to go to who's the Fox guy officiating dude?
Pereira.
Yeah.
And Pereira, and you know how all these guys are they tiptoe around this stuff because they're part of a fraternity, even if they're no longer actively involved. And whenever they throw it to the booth guy or the studio guy, and he has no choice but to say, I don't know what they were seeing on this one. It was a glancing blow across the face mask. I think it's with the officiating, it's another example that we talk about the stakes are higher in the playoffs and players sometimes choke under pressure. I think officials see them in the same light. And again, I'm going to pound the damn table on this. We have this technology now that allows you to quickly rectify drops or catches and reverse things without going to break and without slowing the pace. Why not have New York doing the same thing with these potential game-changing plays? After the Slayton drop, which broke my heart for Daniel Jones because he played so great and the game should have been over there, and then that roughing the passer call, which gave the Vikings the ball near midfield, at that point, I was 100% in the bag for the Giants because like they deserve to win this game.
Absolutely. I'll let you over with the Giants at that point with me.
All right, and I'll understand that the Saints are better. Let's now talk about that play. Let's talk about it. Fourth down. It's fourth down, and I believe 8 for the Vikings near midfield, and Kirk Cousins drops back, checks it down to Tyler. The T.J. Hockenson, who had another big game, he tries to shake free. He gets tackled. It's a great tackle. That was made. I want to give the Giants player
Xavier
credit.
McKinney.
Yeah, McKinney made the great tackle. Here's Kirk Cousins after the game. A lot of people are wondering, how is he throwing short of the sticks in that spot? Where's Justin Jefferson? Here's what Kirk Cousins had to say.
Tried to work Justin. Didn't feel good about putting it up to Justin. And then when I went to progress, I just felt like I was about to get sacked. And I felt like I got to put the ball in play. And if I take, you know, I can't go down with a sack. So I just thought I'd kick it out to TJ. And I had thrown short of the sticks in a few occasions in the game and even going back a few weeks and just felt like, you know, just throwing it short of the sticks isn't the end of the world. It's just, you know, it's obviously tight coverage, so didn't have the chance to pull away. But I just felt like I was going to go down and take a sack if I didn't put it out.
It's kind of amazing this season for the Vikings how everything seemed to go their way. And even the way he said that, Cousins, is, you know, I've thrown short of the sticks a lot. And, you know, even recent weeks it would work. And in this case, it did not work. And it just happened to be the last play of the season for the Vikings on offense. I guess it's very easy for someone to say in a podcast studio, just throw it to Justin Jefferson.
Right.
But Jefferson is a generationally great talent, and you could either get a catch out of it. You could draw a penalty. We already know those officials were flag happy after what we saw a couple plays earlier. It's just, I understand the Vikings fans that are livid that their quarterback, who's known for coming up small in a big spot, made that play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad look because we're accustomed to just automatically critiquing that. I kind of liked his explanation. The only thing I'd say is, like, and TJ Hockenson was awesome today, but I would say that, like, why not, if it's your last gasp, your last chance, give it to the guy that basically got you here, which is Justin Jefferson. The Jefferson Cousins connection. If it's against all odds, no one's ever going to kill you for firing it to Justin Jefferson. That said, I mean, we're sitting here. We don't play quarterback. I don't know. They saw what we didn't see.
Right. They bracketed Jefferson all game. He only had 47 yards on 9 targets, his longest
gain. What a great job by their defense in that situation.
And my answer for, like, why he didn't do this, because, like, he did break out of that somewhat this year where he would just give Jefferson a chance to make a play. And so maybe you're right. I think he was the first read on the play and that they had a lot of defenders back there. But Cousins is so unlike most of the quarterbacks in this league because he can't escape. And you saw today, I think Cousins played a really good game until the end, basically. I think he played well. He was getting hit almost every other snap, and he was hanging in there. And his superpower is he's been good at holding to the last second and then getting it to
his
guys.
Keep his eyes upfield. Yep.
And in this case, yeah, I guess he was hoping Hockenson would break a tackle. At that point, it was Dexter Lawrence again who was going to go get that sack, and he was right. He hit Lawrence on the follow-through, and either way, I think that play was just going to be won by the defense, no matter what Cousins did.
You can't come out of this game just hating on Kirk Cousins, because I totally agree with you. I thought that, like, in a Ryan Tannehill-esque type of way, he threw some shots downfield where he was absolutely brutalized after the throw.
That would be, longtime listeners know, La Raville Magnifico. Anybody talking about this game and everyone just says, oh, they lost because Kirk Cousins choked? No. Mm. The Vikings lost because their defense, which was terrible all year, once again, was bad again. And this time the offense wasn't able to bail them out. Let's give the last word, though, to Brian Daboll, who was asked by a reporter why he seemed to almost be understating how well his quarterback played in his first playoff game.
Isn't good a good adjective to use?
Good?
Yeah.
It's good?
I'm not a writer. I'm just a coach. So, look, Daniels, I've said it all year. He's been good for us. He continues to be good for us. And he played a good game. And I think there's a lot of other people that play good games, too, to help him play a good game. He'll be the first to admit it. But as the leader of our football team, you know, I'm proud of him.
I mean, he played a great game.
He did, but I think Daboll, like, who's talking to Daniel Jones more and helping Daniel Jones grow more than Brian Daboll? It's like,
it was understated, though, because I think that this the reason we're all in agreement, Greg has finally come around on the Giants.
Sure.
Which is nice. Well, welcome aboard, Greg.
I mean, you picked the fraudulent Vikings over them. Give me a break.
The reason why we all feel that they're frisky now, I think in large part, first of all, it should be said real quick, Saquon Barkley, if Dexter Lawrence was the best player on the field, Saquon was the second best player on the field. He was explosive, powerful. He is such a badass, that dude. And now he's healthy again. But Jones lifting his play has made the Giants just a different team. And they're interesting now. That's something.
It makes you think of his entire career differently. I mean, he wasn't this guy before, but, like, it was interesting to hear, like, Jason Garrett in the studio.
Interesting about Jason Garrett in the studio?
I guess what I found interesting, that's a fair point, but, like, praising Daniel Jones, like, I love you, Daniel, great to see you, but it's like, you're part of the reason, like, not just to kill Jason Garrett, but the coaching that Daniel Jones has gotten was very different than this year. Brian Daboll is a difference maker with quarterbacks.
All right, let's take a break. We got one more game to get to. Oh, the Cincinnati Zoo. Coming up next.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18, my first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
My first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name.
That's my game.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.
Greg just shared with me, welcome back, some ratings information about the program. And the only response that came to my mind was what, Greg?
Boom shakalaka.
We're all bringing right. It back. Feeling good. Let's head the final game of the weekend to Cincinnati, where the defending AFC champions, they had a fight on their hands. Oh, my goodness. It's a tough division, that AFC North.
From the one, Huntley sticks the ball out. The Bengals have the ball. They are running it back.
He can't go the whole way.
No, he can't. He's a big man.
His number's in the 90s.
Well, look at Mark Andrews.
The 30, the 20,
the 10,
the 5. Touchdown.
Amazing.
Bengals. Tyler Huntley tried to extend the ball over the goal line. It got poked away. Sam Hubbard scooped it up and ran the length of the field for a go-ahead Bengals touchdown.
Oh, Bengals fans, these are the glory days. Special moments. Dan Hoard, Dave Lapham with the call, WCKW. Are you kidding me? Sam Hubbard returned Tyler Huntley's goal line fumbled 98 yards for a tie-breaking touchdown in the fourth quarter, and it helped Joe Burrow and the Bengals survive a major scare from the Ravens and backup quarterback Huntley, a 24-17 win for Cincinnati, and they advance, yes, to meet the Bills. Right? The Bills?
That is correct.
In Buffalo.
In Buffalo next
week. How about that? So they will play
on Sunday.
Once again.
3 p.m. Eastern on Sunday.
We'll go through the whole schedule at the very end of the show. But anyway, Mark.
On CBS. No, I'm just kidding. I know you didn't want me to share any more about that. But
no, see, people are like, I was ready to tune out.
Yeah.
But he just said he's revealing the schedule at the end of the show.
Oh.
People are stuck now. They're trapped. They need it. There's no other way to get it. Facing third and goal at the one with about 12 minutes left. Yes, Huntley tried to go over the top of the line for that go-ahead score. But Jermaine Pratt. He got stood up by Jermaine Pratt, and Logan Wilson poked that ball away, Mark. One of the biggest plays of the year.
Yeah, and Logan Wilson, you know, we were watching this together at this point in the viewing room, and Logan Wilson had a big stop on Huntley earlier in the game as well. But my problem with this was that, like, we live in a world where I have no problem with Josh Allen doing that, attempting that play. I have no problem with you know, people doing like the double butt push on Jalen Hurts to convert.
Trevor Lawrence had that play
Trevor
for
Lawrence,
the 2-point
conversion.
Trevor
Lawrence is 6'6", and like Huntley is doing the best he can. Huntley is 6'1" and like 195. Like,
but the ball wasn't at the 1-yard line either. It was like
one
and a half.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
I just thought this was not the play call I would have gone with here.
Let's hear what Joe Burrow thought about the play of the game.
Going through your mind during that Sam Hubbard.
Run faster, Sam. Go. Get there. He actually did look pretty fast, surprisingly.
This from Next Gen Stats. That's great. Sam Hubbard reached a top speed of, what do you think it was?
Well, I do know. You told me.
Okay. So
I
can, 21 miles per hour. Everyone runs 20. No, no.
No, it was not.
17.43
for his size,
miles
that's
per hour.
It's amazing.
Gravedigger, give me the bio, height, and weight of Sam Hubbard. The third fastest speed by a defensive lineman as a ball carrier this season. Mark Andrews, hot on his tail, reached the fastest speed of his career, chasing down Hubbard, 20.72 miles per hour, the tight end, but could not make the tackle. The athletes, they're good.
He was trying to do that Leon Lett thing. He couldn't pull it
off. 6'5", 265.
Imagine a man of that size running almost 18 miles per hour.
That is ridiculous. And the fact that, sometimes a game does come down to one play because the Ravens kind of outplayed the Bengals, other than that one play. And for a kid from Archbishop Moeller, as our friend Spice Rack points out to me, a local Cincinnati kid,
you and Spice
Sam
Rack
Hubbard.
Still texting, huh?
When this play happened, I heard a lot about the local Cincinnati high school dominance of athletics, of which Sam Hubbard and apparently Spice Rack and the Wesleyan brothers,
speaking of glory days,
were a part. And for a local kid to make that play that will be remembered forever and just get out of here and get rid of the Ravens. They don't want to see this team anymore. The Ravens in the last 2 weeks held Cincinnati under 500 total yards. And when I say they don't want to see the Ravens, I mean the Ravens defense. The Bengals averaged 4.1 yards per play over the last 2 weeks. They didn't top 260 yards in either game. They were physical. They really shut down Joe Burrow. And when you lost Jonah Williams, their left tackle, during this game, at that point, the Bengals offense didn't do a lot more, and that's concerning.
This is really what Wesley and Chris Wesley would have called a Pyrrhic victory, because, Jay Morrison of The Athletic said that not much celebrating as they walk into the locker room, the Bengals. A lot of head shakes and exhales. Like, you won, you got out of here, but you have three of your offensive starting linemen not available to you right now.
No cigars this week. They were doing the cigar thing last week.
Yeah. I thought that Burrow was certainly affected by the line issue, because there was a lot of him having to run around and try to escape pressure. And it's like, all right, you did that last year, but to do that 2 years in a row, if this is the state of their line, and it is, you got a problem.
It's also Cincinnati's in a different place than they were last year, when they were Destiny's darling and nobody was expecting anything. Like Buffalo, they're expected to, if they don't go to the Super Bowl, it's a bust this season. And this game, I think they were surprised, because I think they knew, obviously, it's a division matchup, and Baltimore did play them tough last week. But I think, at least I know you had a different viewpoint on this, Greg, going into this game, and you turned out to be right on this, which was the Baltimore Ravens were ready for them, and they really did stunt what Cincinnati was trying to do on offense. And then you factor in, yes, the offensive line issues. And this is an issue. Paul Denner, who covers the Bengals, pointed this out on Twitter. They went the first 15 weeks of the season, Cincinnati, without having any offensive line injury, a major injury. In the last three games, they lose their right tackle, Lyle Collins, to an ACL, a right guard, Al Kappa, to an ankle, and now left tackle, Jonah Williams, to a knee. And we'll see how serious that is. It is the type of thing, Greg, where you really, because I really like Cincinnati too, for a lot of different reasons. You wonder if this is going to be the thing that does them in as the competition jumps
up. You hate it, because you spend all offseason talking about these teams, and then you get to this point, and they're just not those teams anymore. That's how you get Skylar Thompson starting a game for a promising offense, and now this Bengals team that had such great continuity. I think you said it, that they had the same group
15 games without a
major injury.
They
were the only
injury,
team that didn't have those injuries. Now, look, they only had three drives after that touchdown drive where Joe Burrow was magnificent. They did have three long scoring drives. It was a game where Baltimore kind of played the underdog playbook perfectly. They limited possessions. They took possessions away and kept the ball. They did a good job offensively. That was a little worrisome too. I do think the Bengals offense will have better days, and that this is a particularly tough division matchup, seeing the same team three times in the season.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, we're going to get a Bills and Bengals showdown where both of these offenses were kind of like, I mean, the Bills are in a different situation. I mean, they're like super explosive at times. But this is a Ravens issue for me today. This was a team that kind of bottled up Burrow all year long. And I don't think it's who they are. But the line issues to me could be enduring, because you're right back where you started from in terms of your offseason building. All the work you did has vanished.
And the line issues are not just protecting Burrow at all. It's the running game, which has been hot and cold all season. And they basically gave up on it today. I'm thinking of one play where Roquan Smith just stuffed
Mixon on a second and two, and then they didn't even try to run again the next down, and it ended up being another three and out. That part's worrisome, but you do still have Higgins and Chase and Burrow. Like, even though it happens in the first quarter, sometimes the games are won there. He had a couple great drives early that ended up just being enough.
I will say, like, J.K. Dobbins after the game had some pretty strong comments about that Huntley play that we talked about. He was steamed that he wasn't out there. He basically said, in quotes, "I'm a guy who feels like I'm on the field at all the time. I can help this team win, and I wasn't. It's the playoffs. Why am I not out there? 12 carries, it's the playoffs."
He also added, if we would have had Lamar, we would have won too. We'll get to that in just a bit. But Dobbins, we were saying the same thing. We were watching in the theater, Greggy, when this all went down. When that fumble occurs, like, why isn't Dobbins, who's been chewing up yards on the ground all day, why wasn't he getting the ball?
He was their best offensive player,
and
certainly.
That's something – that's a tough way to go into the offseason like that. That came from Jeff Zerbiak, by the way, the Ravens athletic reporter. Other Baltimore gaffes, I thought that they did not handle the clock well on their final possession, and I'll point out specifically some time elements here. First and 10 – at the Cincinnati 28, Tyler Huntley passes to Dobbins for 11 yards and a first down. That's at 1:17 remaining. Baltimore, I believe, had two timeouts at this point. They don't call a timeout, and they don't run another play until 34 seconds on first and 10, and it's an incomplete pass. And they then take a holding penalty that kind of knocks them back. And all of a sudden now they're at the 27 with 22 seconds left, and they have these timeouts, but now everything's out of sorts.
They never used them.
And they eventually, I know they used at least one, but still they kind of, I think they cost themselves there. Here's how Harbaugh explained it, the time usage or the timeout usage or lack thereof after the game.
I think we played it right. Didn't work out in the sense that after that we had incomplete passes, so you're not going to have a chance to call them. If you complete the passes, you get the ball back in the red zone, you call the timeout. So I think it's, you know, from an elementary level, you could say, they should have called the timeouts, but we had the timeouts worked out right.
He's telling us that we're operating on an elementary level. He's talking to specifically us.
I think he knows a little more
than
us.
I see what he's saying, but the difference is if Lamar Jackson's in that game, they get the next snap off, I think. No matter what, even if you didn't want to use the timeout there, you want to get the next snap off in less than 30 seconds. I mean, you can't compare everything.
Jim said it was fine, though.
You can't compare everything to Tom Brady, but he's getting that thing snapped with 30 seconds left on the clock. That thing is.
But that's why we're watching these playoff games with second and third string quarterbacks in there, and it's not operating like a piece of machinery from outer space. Well, I'm not surprised.
In fairness, they did like a lot of good things. They had 364 yards. Remember that third and one call where they just chuck it up deep to Andrews? I'm like,
I thought Huntley played pretty well.
Right.
They kind of let him be like aggressive.
They
today,
were better per play than the Bengals were. And Huntley, other than that play, really did a good job.
And I want to touch on a couple Melissa Stark related things here real quick. Melissa Stark reports right before kickoff that Lamar Jackson did not travel with the team to the game, which is interesting because was in Cincinnati the week before, and now he's not at the playoff game, and he had also ruled himself out rather than any type of conversation with the team about it. So there's going to be a lot of question marks about that. And this is more now. This also, I think, ties into Lamar. Melissa Stark also, and you know I kind of got on my soapbox about this a couple of weeks ago. I am not about the end of first quarter interview with the coach who's in the middle of a war, in football terms. Here is, in full, Melissa Stark's conversation with John Harbaugh, who, by the way, is under a lot of stress in the game and with his franchise quarterback potentially just in outer space himself.
Yeah, AWOL.
Back in Cincinnati with Ravens head coach John Harbaugh. And John, you told us your guys were going to be disciplined. What did you think about that last penalty?
Well, I didn't like the last penalty.
And so what will you tell your guys defensively?
We'll be fine. Our guys will be fine. It's going to be a hard-fought game out here. We're going to play a good game.
And Tyler Huntley with that interception, you said we might see Anthony Brown. What will that take?
We'll just see how the game goes, okay? Thanks.
Thanks, John.
With a big smile. Melissa, don't ask me another question. I think
John Harbaugh is a young 60 years old.
I think he's a young 60 years old, but I think this Lamar situation, we'll learn more probably in the offseason, is probably aging him in dog years. And this is a tough way to end the season.
He has an intensity to him just beneath the surface. I guess it's not that far beneath the surface. That's like a lot to take. And I've seen that after losses too, sometimes when they're asking him questions. And he would be high on the list, along with Belichick, of guys you just don't want to ask tough questions
to. Well, I mean, he shares
after a loss.
Maybe a mean dad.
Think of the other Harbaugh brother. So
nice
he keeps it under wraps compared to Jim Harbaugh there.
Like a good father. But, you know, like if you get his temper going.
Do you remember this expose on John Harbaugh that came out a couple of years ago where he allowed us to look at his schedule?
Right.
And he did have, like, in the course of, like, each day, like an 8 to 10 minute period penciled in to speak to his daughters, I think it was. Like, it's because he was that busy, but
so old. That was like a Yahoo article from, like, 2014 or something.
I remember we talked about it.
The headline of that story was good father, comma, mean dad. I think that's what
that was. That was the headline.
By the way, and just I don't want to belabor this, but Greggy, I brought it up to you. You know, the thing with Lamar, and we're going to learn more about it, obviously, or maybe we won't. Who knows? But we'll see where his future is. And Greggy, I know that you have some reporting to share in a moment. At one point during the telecast, and this is where I get a little signals crossed, they remarked that Tyler Huntley's best friend is Lamar Jackson. And Tyler Huntley happens to be playing the biggest game of his life. And then that's when I get a little confused, because it's like, if there is an issue with the player and the team over money, I understand, and there's a business side of this. But not being on the field, if this guy's your best friend and you want your team to be successful, don't you want to be down on the sideline with Tyler Huntley?
Much less
Huntley?
The rest of your teammates.
Like talking to him, taking him through different things. You know, that kind of surprised me that he wasn't in the building. And I know there's always going to be a sentiment, oh, you're being pro-ownership. It's not the case.
No.
But sometimes what I struggle with is the being the teammate side of this that also kind of crosses paths with the business side and how bad blood can develop with an organization, not necessarily with teammates.
I think it's complicated. There's a lot we don't know, but as a friendship and a teammate part of it, look, I think those two men like know exactly what's going on in each other's life, and the status that Lamar has with the team right now, it might be a distraction for him to be there and be around John Harbaugh. Now, you can assign blame to whose fault that is to get to this point. It's not a good point. If you had asked if we had this information before you asked that question on the Thursday show, what's the percentage that Lamar's back for the team? I would have answered it a lot more than 10%. I feel like we're in a different place, and I can't help but notice Roquan Smith getting that contract extension last week, doesn't have an agent. There's just been buzz, I guess, that like they were working on a contract for Lamar last week, potentially, like that this isn't necessarily, like, I think in a perfect world, like that all would have happened. And I think the money and everything got mixed up here along with his injuries. I'm not doubting that, like, he has the looseness in his knee, but I think if he's not with the team, that feels like it's taking this whole thing to another level.
I don't know why this didn't occur to me earlier, but we are going to talk about Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about it now.
Soliloquies about Lamar Jackson 875 times. No.
Where did you get the reporting on the contract situation?
I didn't have any reporting to share.
Oh, I thought it was from
our
friend.
Was it your paper?
Well, it wasn't for the Washington Post. No, it wasn't.
But it was that reporter.
It was, Jason LaCanfora for, I believe, a radio station reported that, like, he thought this was coming, essentially. And that he wasn't going to be showing up, and he thinks
WAPO's not going to be happy that he's not reporting.
He thinks the relationship between the Ravens and the Lamar is in a bad place.
I do not care what the Washington Post says.
I mean, him not going to the game to me tells I don't know what it is exactly, but it's a lot.
It's an eyebrow raiser.
I think you're also, when you do that, and Lamar is savvy enough to know that when he doesn't show up, and we're all talking about it now. We're all talking about this whole thing, and it's like that's an extra thing. Where had he
been
there?
To his credit or not, I don't think that is his focus. Because he doesn't manage, like, he doesn't have he's not managing the PR angle of it as a priority.
I mean, just like, if you don't show up to your team's playoff game and you're able to go, what are we doing here?
Well, I think the able to go is a separate issue. I'm not saying that.
Maybe, like, couldn't get a ride.
I think like he was able to go, like, to play in the game, but this indicates a bad state of their relationship, no doubt.
Yeah.
All right. And now what everyone's been waiting for. And remember, there's one more game. It is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting the Dallas Cowboys Monday night, and we'll have the full recap and all the other reaction to everything that's going on in our league as we start spinning towards divisional round play on Tuesday. But you've been waiting for the divisional playoff schedule, and here it is.
So sorry, but before we get too far,
yes,
the Nick Wessling locked the Bengals. Okay, go ahead with this game.
It was tight.
Just want to, you know, keep the audience on their toes.
No, it's that's bookkeeping. That's an important part of being a producer. Thank you, Grave Digger. Saturday, this upcoming Saturday, the first game, 4:30 p.m. Eastern on NBC, the Jacksonville Jaguars at Kansas City Chiefs. Frisky.
I love it.
I think it's frisky.
I'm glad we got this because had it been the Ravens winning, it would have been a whole different situation. This is nice.
I like that. The night game. Oh, it's going to get wild and salty in the Northeast because the G-men travel to the Link to face the Eagles at 8:15 ESPN. Eastern. That's on Fox. The Sunday games will be Cincinnati at Bills on CBS at 3 o'clock and Cowboys or Bucks at Niners at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
Good slate.
Very good.
It is.
It's the best weekend of the year, divisional round playoffs.
Came within a hair of having the Bengals and Bills knocked out. That would have been utter chaos.
I think this is kind of perfect. You got good games, but you got the top two seeds in each conference through.
You got the Bengals through, which I wanted. And the way this Giants team is playing, that game is, in the way the Eagles ended the season, that game is very
way
compelling.
More interesting to me. And Hurts' endless updates about a shoulder that's not feeling up to snuff.
Right.
Like a lot going on there.
I mean, Nick Sirianni did a lot of talk about what a great healer Jalen Hurts is. Let's see how healed up he is come Saturday night in Philadelphia. All right. Any other thoughts, boys? I thought that was a solid, professional, comprehensive breakdown of super wild card weekend.
We are professionals, and I would just like to let you know and others that we've had a microphone issue in here, a headset issue, and so the entire night, I like to use the cough button on these machines a lot, just in times, just to...
Sure. And you're a big cough button guy in general.
Yeah, my cough button is located above Greg's lap because it had to be plugged into the one that Greg's normally in. He's one further down. We're opening the kimono here to somebody, but
we can edit this out, so it's fine.
Sure, but I did not use the cough button once because it seemed too awkward. So,
but you did use it once, didn't you?
I didn't use it twice.
Justin, this is when you hit the music. Was there any type of glancing?
I warned Greg ahead of time that this might be a thing, but I tried to keep it to a minimum once.
Give me wink if there was a crotch graze.
No, not on my not on
Heed
my.
Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. Undercover Tourist.
Get in zone, AutoZone. Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I gotta change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
Get in zone. What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free. Get in
zone. And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone. Get in zone. AutoZone. Restrictions apply.